Yeah, I used to have that experience when I traveled from San Francisco to Japan. I would marvel at how amazing it is that I had woken up in San Francisco and now I'm going to sleep in Tokyo. That's very cool somehow and very bizarre. Yeah. So I mean, there is the miracle of 3D space-time, or the amazing quality of just being here. What's really amazing is that we're here and we're not here. Physically, we're here, but metaphysically, we're significantly or primarily not here. The majority of us is not here. Majority of us is in time space. Majority of us is immaterial or metaphysical, non-physical. The more we're aware of our higher dimensionality, the more we may feel it's weird, it's strange that I'm incarnate here also. That's a very, and you know, these are deep mind perceptions, beliefs, conceptions, experiences that are influential to a whole lot of preferences and activities and ways we live our life. There's a lot in our life, a lot of decisions are influenced by deep mind biases or and distortions and beliefs and values, including the one of there's something terribly wrong here. I'm here, but I'm not here. I'm here in this fleshy, meaty form that doesn't seem to be me at all. In the sense that what I can conceive in mind is seems so far from the nature of this body in itself. So, anyway, those kinds of deep mind perspectives, beliefs, experiences influence a lot below the surface. Yeah. Well, to the extent that you're the logos, you're them. At the highest and most refined totality, you know, most refined level, which is the most inclusive of the totality of beingness, self and the logos is one. Therefore, all beings as expression of the logos is you. Okay, so all beings is me in my logoic totality, identity, in the identity of my totality, which is logoic. Okay. But in time and space, they surely have autonomy and or free will. And we don't know them too well. We don't know ourselves too well either. So I am all. And I know all, nearly none. I know very little about the all that is me, also. I think that's corollary. Well, I mean, people, humans will keep dying until dimensional shift, as in the normal 3D cycle of an incarnation. There may be major destruction, there may not be. I would imagine there probably will be more than there is now, because it seems like things are on an upswing. And those that, therefore, a greater quantity of people might be dying early and going to the astral plane. That's where they normally go. In terms of any kind of project salvation, you know, salvage project, liftoff, evacuation, that is not so likely, in general. It seems to me, even though New Age people have been hoping for it for decades. The incarnate people are in space-time. The disincarnate phase or astral city or astral zones are time-space. So the people who ride it out remain in space-time, and the people who die or die young or early or in quantity or not go to time-space. You mean the souls who, well, you've got 3D natives who are harvestable, and you've got 4D positive wanderers who are double-bodied. Most 4D positive wanderers probably are double-bodied, meaning they have their fourth dimensional body somewhat more activated than normal. In that case, so long as their karma is not heavy, then they may well transition from 3D space-time to 4D positive space-time without death. To the extent that a harvestable 3D soul doesn't have a fourth density body, then they would die and come back to 4D positive. To the extent that, or for the case for those who are not harvestable but survive any kind of destruction, if that's indeed, I mean, it's just the same as now. It's just a different of magnitude, right? There are people in Lombok who died. There are people in Japan who died. There are people in, you know, Greece who died in riots. And they go to the astral plane. Some of them may be harvestable. Most of them, I imagine, are not. And they do their thing in time-space and either come back to the world in 4D positive or go to another world in third density space-time. And whatever, whoever doesn't die young or early stays until dimensional shift, I'd imagine. And after that, or at that time, they would have an astral phase. The astral plane is not destroyed. It's just probably vacated in the fourth density phase, or it's less populated, or there are changes because there's no longer 3D space-time for a while for them to return back to. Yeah, no, I mean, I think all those perspectives on the body are both personal and objective, universal views, both. So your ability, your experience of these multiple perspectives on body is the result of, you know, continuing personal evolution and development of awareness. And you're tapping into genuine principles involved in the nature of the body and the function of embodiment. And what you're, you know, you can see the body as an organic, biological, you know, element or entity which is akin to flesh and the features of meat, really. Carne is meat, carne, incarnational. Meanwhile, I totally agree that structurally and functionally, it is the product of, in many ways, the entirety of biological evolution on the planet. And, you know, it's like when you see a moth who loves the light, it's akin to the eye that registers light naturally. Yeah, I mean, every single insect or creature, particularly the smaller insects, I've talked about this maybe once somewhere long ago, can be seen as logoic experiments, developments, experiences of aspects of consciousness itself. The worm that moves by peristalsis or by a wiggling, like a snake or the worm or the salamander, is akin to the function of the digestive system. The bird that goes with its head, buck, 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 the pigeon kind of chicken-headed, buck, 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 back and forth, has certain relationship to the tongue, has certain relationship to the neck, the functions or abilities of the neck of a human. And so all sorts of different creatures can be seen as historical, biological, metaphysical developments and vehicles of expression, vehicles of experience that in many ways have been integrated into the human body. Meanwhile, from a higher chakra perspective, this flesh is light. It's a flesh light vehicle. It's a light It's an intelligent energy, love light, twinkling flesh form vehicle that summarizes or encompasses or integrates in certain ways the totality, I think, of all biological evolution on planet Earth up to this point. And that's sort of the external environment of flora and fauna, of plants and animals, reflected by the features and functions and structures of the whole of the physical body. Just like you say, you know, the intestinal flora are little guys in my gut, helping me or hurting me, depending on how I'm thinking and living. This is a holistic kind of principle. And some evolutionary biologists understand that, by the way. You can find some guys who know about that. It's not just spiritualists who ponder this way. Yeah, oh yeah, well, that yeah, the outer is a reflection of the inner because it's one field. And so, yeah, if you're hurting the outer, you're hurting your inner as well. And that's why, you know, like in the discussion of the Narakas and the hell rebirth, beings are associated, the experience of that rebirth is fear and anguish, like Dr. Louise in hell or Howard Storm. And that is a reflection, karmic return, reflective karmic return of how they affected the minds of others during their lifetime by, you know, aggressive or abusive speech and behavior, wrong action, wrong speech. So you get what you've created. And if you're, you know, killing freely, but you see, you know, you'll get harm coming on the back, coming back in. But, you know, what you're doing is a little different there, because it's not that you're, you know, rejoicing in slaughter of ants. You're trying to get boundaries clear where they're okay, where they're not okay to go. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, what I found with ants here in the countryside is they're collectivist. The individual doesn't think of him herself as an individual. There's, you know, one for all and all for one. And the only way a message is gotten by the collective is when a multiple number of individuals are get the same treatment. So you know, they ants understand mass slaughter. But individual treatment doesn't apply to the is not learned by the collective.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. There is the collectivist nature of that species determines its mode of learning.
Yeah, there's those 5,000 ants have one mind. Something like that. That one mind determines the activities that serve functions to the whole of groups of the 5,000 or 10,000. And only when a sufficient number within any functional group has the same adverse treatment experience, like every time they go there, they get killed. Every time they go there, they get, you know, flicked away. Every time they go there, they get thrown roughly or treated with ammonia. But only after a certain number have gotten the same bad treatment does the message go back and the collective establishes a new directive. The new directive is, don't go there, go somewhere else. That, you know, those that have learned love also need to know what, you know, tough love is. Which is basically like, you know, if somebody's going to, you know, Trogyam Trungpa talked about that. If there's a guy with his finger on the button to launch nuclear weapon and kill a million, and the only way of stopping him is killing him, will you do it or not? He said, of course I'll do it. No problem. Of course. and take the karmic return, whatever it is, which will be not that simple either, meaning it's not, oh, you killed a person, you're going to be killed again, because of the motivation is to protect a million.
Right. Well, you know, the PureDhamma.net teacher said karma is intention. Karma, the basis of karma is personal intention, which is conscious and unconscious, both. But it's the motivation for action that is the substance of karmic formation, meaning the formation of causality that will lead to a result down the line, a karmic return. The karmic return is formed initially in terms of speech or action, or, you know, thought, speech, and action, by the nature of the intention behind that particular thought, word, and deed. And so, killing an ant with your thumb smushing like, fuck you, goddammit, is a very different than, you know, a very cool-minded, determined flick away off the wall. Like, you know, I like you guys, but I really, you just can't be here. And if you're going to die when I flick you, all right, but I'm not going to smush you, but I'm not going to let you stay here. Because you got to learn, your collective has got to learn, this is my place, I can't, you know, we just can't do that, because what'll happen is, you know, they bring their family, and they bring their babies, and they bring their eggs, and before you know it, you have 1,000 in the wall again. I just can't, no, sorry. You can go, there's a, you know, there's a big forest here. Go out there. So, intentionality is the heart of karmic causal formation, or karmic causal basis. The heart of that formation of karmic cause is intentionality, which is conscious, unconscious, both. And so, the more conscious we are of our motivations, the more we'll consciously shape our future. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Always interesting. And mind nourishing and heart nourishing, hopefully, too. So take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.